Oh my God. Podcast. It's March 15th, 2010, and this is the Idle Thumbs Conf Grenade for GDC 2010.
And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Steve Gaynor.
And I'm Jake Rodkin. And we're joined today by Sean Vanneman.
Sean Famous Vanneman.
Hey, yo. Hey, guys.
What's up, Famous?
Not too much. How's it going, Steve? And it's company?
Good. Yeah, it's good.
Steve and Company is the new name for this podcast.
Steve & Co. Inc.
Yeah.
It was good being at the old conf with you guys today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you quickly... Cool say who you are, real quick. I mean, you work with Jake.
I work with Jake at Telltale. I'm a designer and a writer, and that's what I do.
A designer and a marketer,
and a writer. This is comp voice. This is 3 days of just and it's gone. And there's nothing left. So it's a good time to record a podcast when you don't have a voice. But yeah.
So yeah, you write and make the video games. You write the jokes.
Yeah, they're jokes, and I make them.
Cool.
With Jake and other guys. Sit around.
Nice.
Drink a lot of Diet Coke.
You play video games all day, probably.
Yeah, pretty much.
Get paid to do that.
Yeah, we just tighten up the graphics and move on.
On what level?
I'm sure the number of times now that a developer has shown up on a podcast and they've been accused of tightening up the graphics is probably disgustingly high.
Well, he just did it.
I was just trying to cut that one off at the pass.
Oh, yeah.
Well, welcome to the cast. It's your first time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a famous dude here.
Oh man. Oh buddy.
So how about that Phaedrus?
Phaedrus.
We just last thing that happened today was a secret sort of allegedly secret panel by an unnamed speaker. Yeah, right. Increasingly less secret presenter going by the name Phaedrus, a
Phaedrus.
Greek fabulist.
A fabulist. Do you want to define the word fabulist? Because I don't actually know
someone who writes fables.
Phaedrus. Oh, okay. That's
like cool. Aesop was a fabulist.
Oh, all right. I actually didn't know that.
Learned something on the Idle Thumbs podcast.
On Steve & Company.
This is edutainment.
It is. But yeah, so it was Will Wright, and he did a Will Wright. So he basically spent an hour being awesome.
And melting your brain.
Yeah, injected a small portion of his brain into all of our brains at the same time.
It was a large portion.
It was an ultra dump.
Just like mainlined as hard as possible.
Yeah. Will Wright took an ultra dump into our brains.
Into your brain mind.
Well, and he had, you know, it was sort of a lofty but vague title, or just the metaphysics of game design.
Right.
Which means nothing.
Which calls back, though, to when he announced Spore under the title The Future of Content.
Yeah. That title also reveals that Phaedrus was either going to be a pretentious indie douche or Will Wright.
There is no.
No, I mean, like, when you see the metaphysics of game design, Phaedrus, it's like, this is going to be a guy with a turntable.
It's
going to
be
there,
a guy who actually goes by Phaedrus for real.
Right.
Yeah. Or it's going to
be Will Wright. Yeah.
Phaedrus of Phaedrus Games.
Yeah. Right.
That was an impressive talk, though.
It was.
Because it was like 120 degrees in there, and everybody was...
That was the heat of everyone's brains getting one
melting?
Step from catching fire.
Eggs, eggs on top of heads bubbling.
Yeah, you've never seen a Will Wright GDC,
right? No, that was the first one. Yeah.
Your mind is opened.
Days of no sleep and being on your feet, and then the fact that guy was able to keep my attention for
Was it just like amazing information coming through a haze of... Just like wafting into your brain.
Well, every part of me wanted to be asleep. That's the whole thing.
Except
for
your brain.
Part of me wanted to shut down.
Except for your brain. Clockwork Orange, your
brain.
Your face awake.
Totally, because there was like a rhythm to his slides where it's just genius, 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 genius.
Does anyone remember what he actually talked about? Or did he just sort of like make us all lift 2 inches off of our chairs and then GDC was over?
The general theme was, you know...
Games?
Many entertainment media and the sort of theoretical like divergence and convergence that is sort of simultaneously happening. And I don't know how to fucking summarize it.
But then boils that all the way down to evolution, like in the...
I missed the last like 5 or 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he boiled it.
He did.
The mind card just kept barreling down the tracks. And then he did kind of go back to, you know, like... he kind of wrapped it up at the end, but it was also not like... Obviously, that's what all this has been about. It was pretty broad at the end as well. It was just him talking about all the awesome interconnected thoughts in his brain.
Yeah.
And
exposing
them to us.
This is the least useful summary for anyone listening. I just now tried to put myself in the position of someone listening to this podcast. It was not
you don't want to be one
no
of those
information
people.
Is
the sort of most material takeaway from that entire thing, I think, was when he had the percentage of revenue of all the different distribution channels of entertainment in general, graphed them by whether or not they're sort of like, it was like passive or social and all that stuff. And then had the arrows showing which ones feed into other ones. That was like,
I was actually surprised that sports was the number one thing, along with the internet. Revenue.
$440 billion industry.
The example of like
why athletes make so much,
like why movies, even though movies was in the second tier actually of revenue generating entertainment mediums, that movies, the reason movies are perceived as so big is because movies feed out into all the other ones. Like that graph drew where he just wrote Lion King over the word movies, then had it just be like, well, that also means games, music, plays, theater, like television, like 400,000 arrows all flew out of movies.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work for everything.
Yeah. I mean, he was, I felt like he was trying to encourage people to, you know, in their own work, think differently about the actual media artifacts they create, but also like how constrained they are by the platform they're on, and think about, you know, like when you make games, I think you can tend to kind of narrow yourself down into thinking, oh, games are only this thing.
Right, you think of that one single tunnel stretching back 40 years or whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, all entertainment mediums are different things on different platforms, and, you know, think about everything from finding an extremely specific niche and working towards it with your own
like
games.
Like the 8,000 German horse games?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of which I believe Merrick worked on. Merrick Bronstring is on a couch.
Merrick Bronstring is in this room with us, observing.
Yeah. Thinking about the horse game.
Say that louder.
Say, yell it. That's him. That's BM Bronstring.
Yeah. I thought the talk was also like incredibly optimistic, which I thought was kind of cool. Like,
even though he was talking about humanity becoming a hive mind.
Yeah, but like, there was still this sort of like this brand of like this like thread of optimism to the whole thing. Which
he did kind of leave a little fart on that at the very end. Yeah, where it was like, also everything's ruined and we're all becoming a horrible hive mind. Flippant joke, the end. Like, yeah, that was kind
it was
of
weird though, because I feel like,
did you really think that he was going towards dystopian hive mind?
No, I didn't get that at all.
He specifically,
I didn't get that impression.
I thought the whole talk was really
organic. I thought like his last sentence sort of flippantly implied that was a potential outcome, and then he just closed the talk out, which I thought was
I thought there were little laces of that throughout.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely...
I felt like it wasn't really like a sort of, you know, massive... It didn't seem like a horrible thing. It just seemed to be like everyone could communicate with everyone else all the time instantly, and so people are influenced by each other way more than they used to be, you know, just because of how media works now and communication.
Yeah, I feel like it could have very easily become like a pejorative, like that connection is bad. And there would all this erodes into us being tapped into a with a cable in the back of our heads,
but
especially in lieu of like,
I don't think that was what he was going for.
No, I don't think that's what I was saying when it was optimistic. Because I feel like it's funny because like in lieu of, I guess, that dice talk with Jesse Schell, where everything's going to be fucked. You know, it's like, oh no. And then he comes around and says, you know, Facebook does have millions of users and this graph is staggering, but it is going to behave like everything else, and it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was what I liked about it, was like a very broad and even-handed and like really, you know, smart talk. Because he was like, I mean, in all that's what it made me feel like. He was trying to get people to think about things more broadly, and it was because it was like, okay, because there were a lot of sections to this talk. He went really fast, and one of them was like, okay, everybody's super focused on Facebook right now because they think it's a, you know, a curve that's just going to continue going up.
Yeah, you
up,
think but, of it as just a straight, like, exponential rise.
But actually,
it's
going to be an S-curve that flattens out after this giant boom, and you shouldn't just think there's this one thing. Like, there's all this other stuff simultaneously going on, and there will be another thing that everybody thinks is one thing after Facebook, and, like, chasing that is not necessarily going to be the most fruitful way for you to create whatever you want to create and communicate with the people that you're trying to reach, you know? So... I don't know. I like to talk a lot.
Me too.
There's a ton of content.
I mean, he even made the point of like Eastern versus Western way of thinking, and it was kind of more of a like, these are just observations and perspectives on all the sort of systems at play right now in our industry.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to sit up here and tell you it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
Like, it's just where we are, and it's exciting actually.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pleasant.
Yeah.
Like, that was such a nice note to end the conference on.
Yeah. Good move on whoever organized GDC of having Will Wright be the last thing that happened.
Oh, that was my company. So was me.
Well done. Yeah.
I was responsible for all of it. Wait, yeah, I did
thanks.
The whole thing.
I'm really proud of you, Chris. That
thanks.
Was great.
Yeah, it was pretty easy.
No big deal. It's a text message.
Yeah, it was good because, like, I don't know, maybe it was just me or maybe it was the conference, but I felt like I was kind of losing steam over the course of GDC semi constantly. And
well,
then
Saturday
like,
also was
yeah
Saturday.
And then at the end, at the very end, it's like Will Wright explodes
uppercut.
Your brain. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And saves weird. Saves your perception of the conference by exploding. At the very end, which was great.
Yeah, my pace of the show is the exact. My favorite talk was one I went to on Tuesday, which is Tuesday morning. Which
oh
is
yeah, you went to the
which talk was that?
That was a Soren Johnson.
I missed that. Everyone said it was
oh,
good.
Oh god, it was. I mean, and again, it's not because you sit there and you like your mind is blown.
It?
I guess I am talking. Yeah,
oh,
all
right,
go about it.
Okay. Go for it, famous.
I don't want to. You know, derail us from.
No, Will get
Wright.
Famous.
We have plenty to talk about.
Super
Will
famous. Soren Johnson's really famous. I mean, Civ 4.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Yeah. And it's not one of those things where you sit there and just agree with the guy. But
what was the talk
time.
About?
It was about how, I mean, and it's a very, it's a duh, like when you describe it, you're like, duh. But he would just, it was just such a cogently put together, it was really nice. It was about how the mechanics of your game define your theme and not the, or define the meaning of your game, not the theme that you slap on your game. And he started off by talking about, Ticket
like,
to Ride.
The theme being like the fiction.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like the story
that's
whatever.
That's terminology often used with board game design.
Exactly.
Like the theme is kind of the
which
premise.
Is where he started. And yeah, then he got right. to Risk and said like these mechanics like are risk taking because there's dice involved and or not dice. I mean, yeah, it's a dice game. Sorry. And that you are constantly taking, you know, calculated risks. Like, and that is what that game is about.
Yeah. And it would be about that regardless of whether it says this is a global, you know, game
right.
of global domination.
Right.
Still,
yeah,
the mechanics
it
mean
just
it's
about like
about...
Bubblegum Tycoons.
Yeah, yeah,
it would be the same.
Right.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool. And he brought up the inside of Ticket to Ride in the note or in the oopsie,
which is a board game about effectively building railroads across the country.
Right.
Or is
but
it
the theme of
well,
that?
Right.
In the fiction of that world is written as. You are a rich dude in a parlor room and you have a bet with your buddies who can ride the most rails in 7 days. Like, that's the story attached to that game inside the pamphlet in the box, which is clearly not what the mechanic...
Yeah, it's not what the game feels like to
yeah,
play
yeah,
at all.
If you
exactly.
played it, if you played it without reading that, you'd be like, well, we're a bunch of railroad tycoons trying to build railroads.
Yeah,
and
everybody
the mechanics...
That.
You're trying to claim all the available land, essentially,
yeah.
Yeah, that's available.
Well, like, that is... To, like, I mean, what am I even talking about? Never mind.
Thanks, Jake.
Sorry.
You can be on the podcast. It's fun.
I played Metro a fair amount, which was a board game, and that is the actual premise, and that is the actual mechanic. That's all.
Oh, you mean like trying to ride rails? No.
No, I mean, that, in that game, oh, okay. You are trying to build the longest Metro track underground below Paris. Mm.
Well, yeah,
I don't know why I'm talking about this right now. I just was reminded of it and started talking. Hi, Idle Holmes.
What's up, Jake?
Video games.
That's you.
Board
games. It was a really good talk. I mean, he talked about what World of Warcraft is really about and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean,
well, what is it? Because I didn't see this talk.
Oh, well, the mechanics of that. It's like he talked about, how, actually, he started with Spore. And he said Spore is not about evolution. Spore is about creation and change.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
This is a game where the theme is sure evolution, but there's nothing about this game that's actually evolution.
Yeah, the player is choosing every step of the way, every stage, major stage, the player directs the so-called evolution, yeah.
Whereas World of Warcraft is about evolution. Like, you start as just a paladin, and then you continually, like, become more specialized based on your choice.
But but similarly, you're still choosing. I mean, it's not like you're subject to, you know, I mean, evolution is based on random chance.
Yeah, it's not about selection pressure, right?
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
But,
He's wrong, so that guy's stupid now.
Fuck that guy.
That was the worst talk, I guess. No, it was good. It was very good. And he's just, nice and cohesive, which is good.
I mean, he talked about...
Yeah, he's definitely a smart guy.
He talked about the kind of stuff that, like, Clint Hawking and John Blow have talked about, just like, you know, when a game is fighting against itself because it says it's one thing but the mechanics really translate into something else, you know. And so I think that's what you mean by it kind of feeling like, duh, like your game is about the rules of the game, not what you say it's about, but it's still not an obvious thing to a lot of people who make games.
Yeah,
you know. And it's nice to hear it really, like, well articulated and kind of sound important and like you actually should think about it.
And I think that someone like Soren Johnson is better equipped to, not better equipped, but I think it's understandable why he would talk about that, because that's a very common point of discussion among people who design board games. And the types of games Soren Johnson designs, or that he particularly likes to talk about, are turn-based games like Civ, and he talks a lot about asynchronous Facebook games. And those are games that are very obviously rule-based, unlike a first-person shooter or something, which is rule-based, but that's not what the player thinks about. Whereas when you play Civilization or you play a board game, the player is very, very conscious of the rules, and the player is actively interacting with the rule set. And so it's very clear in games like that when the designer of the game is saying this is what it's about, when there's a dissonance there between that and what the game evokes to you, it's very obvious. Whereas in a, you know, complicated 3D world-based narrative game, you can fake a lot of that shit by just putting a really convincing presentation layer on it. And yeah, it's much harder to do that in a turn-based game of any kind or a board game.
But the thing is, I think that's really, I mean, I think it's easy, even maybe especially for developers, to believe that's true. But I think that players see through that instantly.
Absolutely, I agree.
Because if you put something in your game and put a shit ton of AV on it, that it's like, let's make it look like it's super powerful, but it doesn't do enough damage, then the players are going to be like, that's not powerful. No, you know,
But I think it's easy to buy into that.
I think it's easier for developers to trick themselves into thinking they can paper over that kind of stuff, but players see through it right away. Yeah. You know, like they're not, they don't get snowed by that stuff. They can feel it, you know, when they're playing the game. So.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, Sorenja, actually, I don't know how many people listening read Game Developer Magazine, another product my company makes. I do entirely single-handedly create that magazine.
Wow.
But it's pretty good.
I know, it's pretty good. Good work.
You know her? Yeah.
But Soren Johnson is one of our two alternating design columnists for that magazine.
Oh, cool.
And he frequently talks about that kind of stuff in his column. It's a really good column.
Yeah,
he talks a lot. I don't know, for anyone who's interested in game development or game design, it'd be worth seeking that out. Also, if you don't want to actually subscribe to our magazine, he puts a lot of those up on his blog later. So he's got a blog. You can probably find it by searching for his name.
I think it's SorenJohnson.blog.
.blog?
Yeah, .blog is the new...
.museum, I think.
.blog is the new .museum.
.website, actually.
Right. Yeah. Internet.
.blog museum.
Jake is just a wealth of information.
I don't know if this seg is too far-fetched, but I saw Civilization 5 this week, and I talked to
that's
producer
fine
on the game.
That's a totally fine seg.
That's pretty good. You went from Civ 4 to Civ 5, so it's just one more.
It's
well done.
But the interesting thing about it is...
About Civ 5?
About Civ 5.
Well, okay, not the seg.
Not the seg.
Okay.
We've moved on.
You can go ahead.
No, I think we brought up Civ 5 last week, but that was before there was really much
information
about it.
That was just us being excited about Civilization 6-sided tiles.
So, right. I saw like a 45-minute demo of it this week and then spent a while talking to the main producer on the game. And it's really interesting to me because Soren Johnson, as I think, you know, we already mentioned and a lot of people already know, worked on Civ 4. And Civ 4 was I think a lot of people see as the kind of
pinnacle.
Yeah, the pinnacle of this particular attitude and design of the Civilization series. I mean, it really is like an incredibly refined game. Civ 5 is actually really intriguing to me because it's really different, actually. And I think that was already kind of clear just in the initial screenshots and announcement, but it's actually shocking how many changes there are. There's no stacking. You can't stack units at all. They're obviously, we already know it's hex based. It actually looks like what they've internally kind of realized, all right, we have this game that is seen as kind of the culmination of what we were doing, and we're actually going to try making a different game that, to tie back into what we were talking about, sort of maintains these same themes, but gets there through a different route. And it's really interesting to me. They're almost moving a little bit more, it seems, toward the direction of some other strategy game series like Total War, not far in that direction, but with the idea of trying to have individual leaders assert more discernible personalities.
That's cool.
Which is interesting. I'll be curious to see how that turns out. They will try to execute a plan based on what their cultural kind of predispositions are.
Like cultural predispositions or what we know as the path they took in our...
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess
you
could...
I thought you were going with that, but I wasn't...
Well, no,
crazy.
I mean...
It's like at one point...
I think you could argue like maybe those things probably have a lot of overlap, right? I mean, the one informs the other. I mean,
So Civ 5 is racist.
It is. It's totally racist. Oh, but you know, actually, one really awesome thing they're doing. This isn't really a game design issue. It's just awesome.
It has racism. PSAs.
It totally is racist. Yeah, I love how they're doing that. But no, all of the all of the actual leaders speak in their native language, including like Montezuma, like they, like and all
they
the
got Mel Gibson in there.
Well, they track down all these guys who were specialists in the various dead languages, like some of the civilizations from civilization no longer really exist in any meaningful form, and so they actually had to track down people who specialize in these dead languages and then actually get people who could speak them with, you know, gravitas and depth.
Like, that's extreme.
It's pretty awesome.
Oh, we should totally do that at Telltale on our next thing.
I mean, what, have Montezuma in your
name? Oh, for sure. We'll just cook. Yeah, we'll just cook.
Yeah, have some guy come in and speak ancient Mayan.
Yeah, right. Whatever. Yeah, wow. Duh. We'll do that.
But yeah, it's actually a really cool thing.
That's actually the next episode of Idle Thumbs. We'll all speak in our native languages.
That's actually this episode, I think.
Oh, yeah. We actually started doing that about episode 23 of the old podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Not very many people commented on that change, but...
No.
Under the radar.
Hey, did you get any impression as to whether... did you feel like they're making efforts to make Civ 5 more accessible than Civ 4? Because I really felt like I was coming into the fourth sequel movie without knowing enough to be effective at it. I mean, I loved Civ Rev a lot. Mm-hmm. I didn't get super into it. I didn't play a crazy amount, but I played it through a bunch of times and I liked it. And it was,
it's still pretty complicated.
I could be a stupid person, but it took me a few, like,
I think that goes
a big, a number of catastrophic failures to really understand how to play it well, even with Civilization Revolution, which is like,
it's really arcade Civ, I guess. Have you only played 4 and Rev?
No, I've only played 2 and the like half of the tutorial for 4, and I was just like, this is not for me. And then Rev,
because I just bought 4 and then I was in, so it's like I'd never played a Civ game before then. And I was like, oh, I'm learning.
Steve, what he's saying is you're an idiot.
No, it was I'm saying I totally agree.
Okay, yeah. So
we are just both idiots.
Right.
But I eventually became obsessed with that game, but I still don't think I'm good at it. I'm just like, spies,
do you find, though, that it's that, I mean, and I'm this is not a leading question. I'm actually really curious. Do you find that it's enjoyable to play even if you don't understand all of it, or do you find that it's confounding?
It feels... Because it's weird because you come to it with what you know about human history and of course I'm going to need to know pottery.
Right.
But then to play this game where I like have machine guns and have just neglected pottery is bizarre.
You can totally do that though. Like that's valid.
It doesn't kind of like, there's nobody at the beginning of Civ 4.
Doesn't reassure you that that's okay?
Sid needs to come on screen and be like, okay, so here's the deal. Like you're going to be able to shoot dudes in the face at 1,000 yards.
Yeah. Before
you're not
you can build
rice.
A wall. Yeah.
Yeah. That wasn't my problem. That was really weird for me.
Like I had to get that.
That's interesting. I've never heard someone mention that, but that's totally makes sense.
Because coming from my point of view, since I had played Civilization 2, like, you know, a long time ago, but I played it. The whole like tech tree thing was not super weird to me. It was all of the other stuff that had been added on in between. You know, like it felt like the game had a lot of complexity that you basically had to interface with all of it to be effective.
Okay, so
you know, and like I guess I wonder if
I can address that.
My expectation is in Civ 5, I could see them a productive direction might be retaining complexity but allowing you to be fairly effective by ignoring a lot of
No, that's really true. I can't Sean, I don't really know if they're addressing what you have weirdness with.
Oh, I don't even need it to be addressed. That's like my gamer baggage, you know, that you bring to everything.
But no, Steve, particularly from the interface elements, and I don't know what they're doing in terms of, you know, tutorial kind of stuff or anything, but in terms of just the interface that's always there in front of the screen, they are like drastically reducing the number of immediately available options for any given unit. And if you need all that weird stuff, you can sort of like tree it out, you know, outward. But like all the stuff you actually see on the screen is the stuff that like 95% of the time is what you're doing, which is like move a guy, build a city here. Like, I mean,
I think the thing that was even bigger for me was city management stuff, which could get super complex.
Yeah. The demonstration I got is not really in depth enough to be able to really comment on that, I guess. But I'll probably see it soon. But it definitely seemed. I mean, they did say that they learned a lot from Civ Rev, which was kind of their first stab at doing that kind of thing, about making a more presentable modern era Civ game. It definitely seems like the interface is one of the areas that had the most significant amount of time invested into it in terms of accessibility. Whereas a lot of the other systems, I think, are changing a lot, but I think they're trying to retain basically the same amount of under the hood complexity. I think they said they're trying not to exceed Civ 4 in that respect, but not to dial it back either.
That's cool.
And their UI and graphic designer has not played BioShock.
Yeah, I specifically asked about this.
Because the Civ 5 logo and stuff looks very like they've got that sort of Art Deco thing going on, and it just, if like 2K and games, two biggest franchises are BioShock and Civ.
Yeah.
And right now they both have this super clean sort of like slightly like pre-modern deco thing. And they look like, I don't know, I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
Chris and I were talking about that. What? I love stupid crap.
I just started
like
picturing like if Civ and like BioShock made a baby. And like
it would be fucking
weird. Civ 5?
It would be BioCiv. It would be Civ Shock.
It's like what would happen to your city.
Shock.
Your city start all
Sid
nice
Myers.
And then
they go underwater.
It's really
But yeah, I like thank you Chris for asking about that, because we were both like
I asked the guy.
I can't even picture the logo.
Look it up.
Yeah, it's actually a really nice looking logo. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, the treatment for all the Civ 5 stuff.
The whole little logo animation that goes through, takes the logo through all the ages, I think is beautiful. But anyway, since I liked it so much, I asked the guy about it, and I said, it's interesting that this game and BioShock, obviously both owned by 2K Games, like, is that, I don't know, you guys just were like, sweet, it worked for that game. And the guy said, no, they've actually been working on this game for like more than 3 years. And their UI guy has had that look nailed down for quite a while. And then when BioShock came out, or probably when it was, you know, coming out and it was, all the stuff was being promoted everywhere, he was like, oh shit. And so he basically just like didn't, he still never played BioShock because he was really worried about people having, you know,
maybe
wasn't concerned about that, but I guess more about just himself becoming subconsciously influenced by
accidentally start putting a circus of values into
this is a weird thing to say, but I like that they made Civ Rev in between 4. I like when games do that, actually. We're like, we're going to do something drastic and weird and figure something out in our franchise. It's like, it feels like they're making, I like it when they kind of jump off.
It forces
them
to take a little bit of a different perspective.
Yeah, like they're making a game for us and them, actually. They're like, we're experimenting with some things and we're putting it out because it's good, but
Civ Rev was definitely an extreme learning experience. Every other Civ since 1 has been
like just
evolution and refinement. Yeah, yeah. Civ Rev
bigger,
was like
more badass.
Totally horizontal, yeah.
I think it's cool and good too.
Yeah.
So since we've been talking about Civilization, Soren Johnson, and all this stuff, you guys want to talk about Sid Meier's keynote for a minute? No, yes.
We can.
Sure. I don't know if there's a whole lot.
We can.
I really liked his polo shirt. I love that Sid Meier seems like such a totally like normal dude.
He is.
He's such a totally normal, just like dad.
Yeah.
Like, you look at the guy and like that's
someone's dad.
Yeah.
And
that's someone's really friendly dad.
Yeah. It's like a totally normal dad, except this one made Civilization.
Right.
I like that about him.
No, he's a super nice guy.
Yeah. When he was like, when I go to the movies with my wife, like I instantly just saw him in the row ahead of me at like the AMC and like, Creek. And I was like, oh yeah, you're that guy.
Yeah,
on like a Thursday.
It's weird
night.
That we all have domestic fantasies about Sid Meier. They're different ones too. I imagine him at the same
frills.
Movie that I'm at. He was my friend's dad in my dream. Like what?
Me. Creepy.
That has nothing to do with this talk.
Well, no, I know when
his talk,
Chris,
not...
when we walked out of that talk, you had a pretty strong reaction to it. I thought, at least maybe compared to some of us.
Well, I didn't have a strong reaction. I thought...
You broke out in hives.
That's true, I did. It was gross. That was not to do with his talk, though.
Oh, that was
I don't want to talk
hives.
About that, yeah. No, but his talk was sort of just an overview, basically, of stuff that he thinks is useful about game design, particularly as it relates to player psychology and kind of player expectation and just kind of design guidelines and rules related to that. And... a lot of it was about, I think probably the through line, I guess, was sort of transparency in game systems and sort of not subverting necessarily player expectation of how they understand something to happen. Like, you know, if they test something one way, they're going to expect it to work a particular way. And as a designer, you should try not to contradict that and create odd and unexpected situations, which
Consistency is basically the number one rule in game design.
Yeah.
I mean, systems are con- consistent by definition.
Right.
Otherwise, it's not a system. Right. And so, I mean, yeah, like emphasizing that.
But is, but it's interesting.
It's important, but it's also extremely kind of like, it's the foundation. Right. You know, it's a thing you should kind of understand.
Right. Already. But there's counterintuitive parts to that, like randomness design or sort of bullshitting randomness in right. a way that is convincing to people.
And it's true. That was one of the most interesting things yeah. about it when he was talking about user testing of yeah. like Civilization Revolution.
And the players just hate random.
Well, yeah.
Well, players assume effectively what it is player. Well, it's funny that he mentioned this because I had seen Rob Pardo of Blizzard basically say the exact same thing earlier that day. Like it was, did the exact same testing and had the exact same results.
Yeah.
Which is players will always read the, if something bad happens as a result of a random roll, players will read the worst into it. And if something good happens, they will attribute it to themselves. Like they will always, you know.
And the thing that I thought, the other thing about it that I thought was interesting was that basically there are these logical fallacies that are known right. to be why the house tends to win in gambling, because people don't understand how actual probability works. And so they make assumptions about like lucky streaks and like how likely they are to fail if they have really good odds and stuff right. like that. So, you know, people lose money because they're like, you know, if I lost last time, it makes it less likely that I'll lose the next time, right. you know, because it would be, you know, crazy for it to happen twice in a row. Well, it's a 50-50 chance. It could happen as many times in a row as you want. It's random.
You could lose forever.
Or, you know, like, just stuff like that. Or, like, if I have 8-1 odds, I'm, you know, that's a sure bet. You know, exactly, well, right. but 1 in 8 times you're going to lose. And so, like, the stuff that his users brought to him was basically like, I do have those assumptions because I don't understand probability, and I'm pissed off when I lose a 2-1 battle like 3 times in a row. That's not supposed to happen. It's 2-1. If I right. lost once, I'm supposed to win the next time.
Right.
And so they actually had to make the logic under the hood of their game work right. differently to reinforce yeah. the like wrong assumptions that players had going in, so right. they wouldn't get frustrated
yeah.
when they played the game.
So that it would work the way they effectively think it's supposed to work.
Right.
And based it would depress me.
Yeah, yeah, it really bummed me out too.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I think it's interesting.
I mean, I think
it's super interesting.
I think it's totally valid because at the end of the day, you can always adjust the actual balance of the game to then go back and refit what your new probability rules are. Right, like you're really only adjusting what the player is aware of and how they react to that. But you can still go back and tune the actual values to be whatever you need them to be to make your game balanced. Like it's purely, I mean, that was what was really interesting. Rob Pardo of Blizzard, this is not probability, but it's a similar thing. In World of Warcraft, what they did when they first designed the game was they had an experience system that would, over time, lower the amount of experience you got because they wanted to encourage people to play for like 2 hours at a time instead of 12 hours at a time. So the longer you played, you'd get this experience degradation and then it would bottom out. And at that point, it would be a fixed rate of experience. And just people just hated it. They fucking hated it. And so they went back and he was like, all right, so basically what we did was we made everything in the game take twice as much experience to achieve as before. And then we flipped it. So actually what happens is you start getting 200% experience and eventually it goes back down to 100. So that effectively now how they spin it is when you log out for a while, you get this 200% boost when you log back in. And then over time it goes away and you just get regular 100% experience. It's exactly the same as it was before, except now everyone's like, fuck yeah, Blizzard, this is exactly what I want. Yeah. Now I get twice as much experience
bonus.
When I log in.
Yeah.
But everything
yeah.
in the game takes twice
as much. Yeah.
yeah. And yeah. so
it's a way of framing it as an extra thing, as a positive
exactly.
thing,
as a
instead
bonus,
of a punitive
yeah. right.
thing.
And he said the lesson they learned from that was even if the underlying system is identical, players always respond to rewards better than punishment. So even if you're trying to mold behavior in the same way, if you can do that with a reward rather than a punishment, even if yeah. nothing's changing, players will always respond
yeah.
better.
And I mean, that kind of shit should be obvious, but you don't think about it. Because, I mean, if yeah. you think about similar stuff that's done in, like, marketing, like in the grocery store, like, just think about...
Exactly.
You
every
know, they're,
sale,
they're,
yeah.
Yeah, because they're like... Oh, buy one, get one free. Like, that sounds attractive. Whereas, like, if you only buy one, it costs twice as much. Like, what? So, yeah. And you have to do that in your game, too.
Right.
But,
the
I
grocery
mean,
store is, You should plan ahead by getting two things of milk. Otherwise, it'll cost you $6.
What?
What?
Yeah. That'll like the store at all. Yeah. Well, how about get this? How about if you buy one, we'll give you one for free? Whoa, this store's fucking sweet. Yeah,
it's weird.
Yeah.
I like stores telling you to... A motherly reminder to stock up on milk, though. Otherwise, it will cost you more.
It's right. Called moms.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Video games.
I like them. But the other the thing about Sid Meier's talk that didn't really seem acknowledged by him was that some of the stuff that he seemed to be presenting as sort of hard and fast universal rules were pretty specific to the kinds of games he makes, where like maybe things he said you should never do, you could actually do in other games. Like when he was talking about some old game, I forget if it was actually released, but
the adventure game that he was working on?
Yeah, the adventure game.
I don't think they released that.
Okay, so it was something he worked on like in the 80s or early 90s, and it was like an adventure game where there's a story where, you know, there's this guy that tells you to go to the castle, and so you go there and you play for, you know, a bunch of this kind of RPG adventure stuff, and you get to the castle, and then you find out that guy was the bad guy all along, and he's like, and then, you know, you have to go back to defeat him, basically. He's like, that sucks. You should never make a game where a guy tells you to do stuff, and then it turns out he was the bad guy after all. Nobody would like that. I was like, BioShock.
Yeah, I was going to say, nobody ever made a game in this way.
And so it's just, I think that, like, some in a few cases, he didn't acknowledge, like, if you're making a heavily systemic, you know, kind of like rules based game,
yeah, if
you shouldn't do this.
The Sid Meier Uber board game, basically.
Yeah, if you're making a Sid Meier game, this is a bad idea. In other situations, it could be applicable,
yeah.
But, you know, and it wasn't really ever voiced. You know, he kind of had these things that were very, like, the one way that you should always do
just
something.
Once there's a sort of player character, sort of weird, you know, cipher that you're controlling.
Once
in the
your
game.
System is effectively like not symmetrical.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's basically yeah. Because he designs essentially symmetrical games. But yeah. Anyway, my response to that was I totally agree with you. I don't think that should be something that a game designer simply doesn't do. I guess my response would be, I think. More even if he maybe didn't allow the wiggle room there that he should have, I think the real message there was, and I think he actually said this verbatim, was don't waste your players' time. I think was more of the real message that was more useful to take away. But I guess the other reaction I had to the speech as a whole was
just to reinforce that I agree with you on that front, where he was using that as a way for saying like. They kind of were doing that. That particular example in their case was kind of designing for the designer's benefit. Like they were like, "This would be so cool. This is such a great twist. I want to do this to the player."
Right.
And then without taking into account, well, maybe the player would actually hate this because in the way they had implemented it, it basically invalidated all the gameplay up to that point. You know. And so yeah, thinking you shouldn't be focused on your own desires. You should be focused on what's going to be good for the player and, yeah, value their time. Those are good takeaways.
Right.
It was just some of the stuff
was
you know, put across in a sort of funny way.
The other sort of overall takeaway I got from that was, and this is arguable, I don't know if necessarily what I'm saying is true, but the sense that I was left with was that these are things that probably work pretty well, again, as you say, mainly in a sort of more traditional systemic environment. But they're things that, because they do run contrary to the notion of kind of consistency for the player, they're things that if you do decide to make a game that reverses that or includes that thing or breaks that rule or whatever, it should be something you think about more than a lot of other maybe less wide-reaching design decisions. Like that's the kind of thing where if you do put that in game, like BioShock, for example, obviously that was an amazing part of that game. That could, like, there's a million ways that could have been done horribly.
Yeah.
More than most design decisions can be done horribly. I was a music major in college, and for like 2 years in our music degree, we learned all of these rules about vocal harmony in, like, you know, 17th and 18th century, like choral harmony. And there's all these complicated rules about the way the different voices interact with each other and what's the most pleasing, like, leading between different intervals and all these complicated rules. And they're all things that our professors would teach them as if they were ironclad rules, right? But which is very frustrating to like college age student. You want to be doing all this, writing all this crazy music and doing all this stuff. And like, I would talk to them after class and I'd be like, do you really actually expect us to like follow all these rules when we write music? And they're like, no, of course not. Like, absolutely not. That would be ridiculous. What we're trying to do is teach you why these work well, so that when you do something else, you understand what it is you're not doing and like why you're doing that. And like this is the pleasing rule that if you do this, it's probably going to sound pretty good, but there are a million other infinite ways you can write a piece of music. But knowing this tradition will help you understand better when you're doing something else. And like, to me, that has always stuck with me in a lot of different disciplines. And that was actually kind of, because I think of Sid Meier as like that Bach like guy, right? I mean, all those rules we learned, that was the Bach style of chorale. And Sid Meier is that very traditional, very kind of, like sort of masterly traditional game designer who balances things carefully and works in that framework. And that's kind of how that talk came off to me. It called back all those memories I had of that very rigorous college education. So for me, it was interesting in that respect.
Yeah. Weren't you going to say something famous?
No, I was going to say that the moment's passed.
I like Nintendo games.
This is serious cast here. Yeah, Jesus.
Wii Sports is fun.
It's a pretty fun game.
I like how it's like you swing the tennis racket.
I know. It's just like that.
We're taking a break now?
Yeah.
Yes.
See you guys on the other side.
Oh, rock and roll. Lock and load.
Weapons hot.
Video game.
This is the Idle Thumbs conf grenade. If you want to see your daughter again, bring the money to the bus station.
Oh, Jesus.
It's the kidnapper voice.
Oh, I know what it is.
That's what it's like.
I don't need clarity.
That's how vague the kidnapper was.
Bring the money to the bus station.
What? How much money? What bus station?
This is my final communication.
No!
Goodbye.
You're a gun rack.
Also, he won't leave. My final communication. No, goodbye. But I'm hanging up now.
No, you hang up.
What? This is terrible. the best a junior high like boyfriend. Like, what is this?
The best. Stop copying me.
This is terrible.
No,
oh, man,
you do it, Steve. You make it do weird things. You make it feel funny.
It was the best, most terrifying version. Let's not put this in because I'm going to mention Far Cry 2. The best, most terrifying version of that is when you take the assassination missions in Far Cry 2 and pick it up from the fucking tower and it's just like... and you're like...
That's fucking creepy.
It is. It's the creepiest version of that voice that I've ever heard, and it's impressive.
Yeah. Mm. So speaking of Far Cry 2...
I was hanging out with Clint Hawking, and we were talking about how cool he is, and I am. And just normal stuff. Anyway.
Famous gainer!
Phaedrus.
And we all have it in common, yeah, so.
If you want to see Phaedrus... this is Phaedrus. If you want to see your daughter alive. Yeah.
Phaedrus is really just the 2010 Zodiac killer.
She'll be delivered via rocket mail. Go to the nearest rocket mail stop.
I don't know what that is.
Goodbye. No, you hang up.
What?
Phaedrus out.
All right. This podcast is never going to work.
No, we're good. Phaedrus.
It's...
All right. Can we call this episode Phaedrus 2010?
Yes.
Oh my god. Terrible. This is the worst episode we've ever made. And we haven't made it yet. Don't fall out of the fucking stool.
Oh, let's try it. See where we can get to.
Video game.
So why do they call you famous, Sean?
They don't. That's funny you should mention that.
Oh, I thought they did. I thought your name was Famous Vanaman.
No, you guys call me that.
Well, because that's your name, right? I mean...
No. That's you guys just called me that.
Was
that on the fact
sheet? Idle Thumbs conf grenade, they called you Idle... They thought famous.
Oh, it was the 2010 episode.
Right. Oh.
Video game.
All right, so we're back with Sean Famous Vanaman.
Oh.
Hey, Famous.
Just going for
What's up, Boost? What are you doing?
You know, just doing a podcast.
Hey, Scoops. Famous. I just want to get on this.
Oh.
What's up, video games?
Video games.
It's terrible that these all exist.
We're the worst. So, Famous, you are on a panel today.
Every time you call me Famous, we're just going to call you Boost.
All right, Famous.
You're using the Royal Wii now, Famous?
Yeah, it was actually a Royal Wii.
I've looked up Royal We on the internet, and I'm pretty sure the Coen brothers invented that for the Big Lebowski.
No, they didn't.
Really?
No.
They
fucking didn't at all.
Oh, okay.
No.
Well, no.
The Coen brothers get no credit.
No.
It was on Wikipedia, so...
The Royal We as a phrase definitely existed before 1996.
No, I understand the practice of royalty and certain other... like classes of people using we to mean I.
Oh, well, the phrase did as well.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was more dubious about, but all right.
What's up, Famous?
Hey.
The Royal We.
The Royal We, yeah.
It still pleases me that in Google, that if I write Hot Scoo, I quickly get Steve Hot Scoops Gainer. That pleases me greatly.
I agree, Famous.
It's the majestic plural.
That's what I thought. I don't think it's actually called the Royal We.
Oh, look.
All right.
Look for first known usage of phrase Royal We.
The Royal We, it's the royal pronoun, the Royal We, or the Victorian We.
But yeah, it is referred to as the Royal We.
Okay, fine. I submit.
To the wiki.
All right, we're back with Sean Famous Fanneman.
Oh.
Hey. I know, I'm not thrilled he's here either.
Yeah. But you set up a microphone for me, which was nice.
I did. So, even Famous, you were on a panel today with Tim Schafer.
I was.
And Rihanna Pratchett.
Yes.
And jokes.
Someone else or just...
John Teddy from the AV Club. He's the AV Club.
He was a moderator, right?
Or, yeah, he was a moderator. Okay. He was a great dude. I can't say enough.
So what did you guys talk about?
Talked about writing jokes in games and comedy in games in general.
Was it writing jokes in games or was it writing...
No, it was
about comedy writing.
It wasn't actually about
Well,
jokes.
No, but I mean, I didn't intend
it. It was about, like, gags, you know,
pretty
like,
much.
Well, because I think...
No. It was about 90s dog.
Well, you know, it was, the reason I ask is because comedy writing games is not actually all that common. And right. So, like,
that's why there's a panel about it.
But there are jokes in games a lot.
They found the only three ones that could talk about that do it.
Yeah. And again, I think Jake is probably better to talk about the moment-to-moment of it, because I was really like this deer in the headlights for most of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you actually apologized at one point for, you know, being insecure.
Yeah, it was funny, because I started talking, and I wasn't talking about being insecure in front of them, because I was talking about like being an insecure writer, how...
That's the most like recursive apology.
And I like bumped my microphone while I got up, so it was like the feedback, and I walked off.
That sounds like you're
like one dude clapped in the background.
And then everyone slowly started joining in and standing up.
Like two guys did, and then they realized that it wasn't catching on, and Sean was in a taxi out of the hell. Yeah.
In a heap of tears.
Yeah, I heard it went well, but that sounds like it went better than I could have expected.
Yeah, no, it really went off without a hitch. Yeah.
I thought that was you, like, getting in on the fact that Sean left the panel and that, like, that went better than you would have expected.
That's exactly what he was saying.
That's what he was saying.
Oh, that is the joke.
And then I gave him a snarky laugh and he looked at me like I was a douche, but I didn't know what to do. You ruined me, Steve. I'm ruined.
It's the normal way I look at you, Jake.
But yeah, I mean, comedy in games is not common. At all.
So
but that was actually the first. I thought John did a good job of that being sort of the first question, was sort of like comedy as genre. And we all had very different opinions multiple times about that, which was cool because...
Yeah, it was a nice panel because you guys didn't actually see eye to eye on almost anything in the panel.
But we didn't argue.
But you didn't argue about it. Yeah. You just sort of said things.
We just sort of had different perspectives, I think. And that's definitely a byproduct of who we are in the industry, you know?
Such as what?
Well, I'm sort of just like, you know, staff
famous
dude, staff writer.
Yeah.
But I mean, you've
written for a lot of well-known and loved characters,
right? But like, Tim
is the god
company.
Well, right.
And then Rihanna Pratchett is a contract writer who comes in to, you know, be a writer on an existing project.
Are you dressing me down? Video games.
Christ, Steve. They're blatantly in three different positions in the industry.
I agree with that.
It makes sense.
I'm with you.
Think about it.
Yeah, I mean, jeez.
But that clearly tinted our opinions.
It was hilarious because of that.
That made it really funny.
Laugh, you bastard.
Come on.
Look how
this
make
him
funny.
Laugh. Comedy writing in games. What?
Tim is very much of the... At least the opinion he expressed, which also, now that I've been on a panel, I want to say, like, the opinion you express very boldly in front of, I don't know how many people fit in that room.
May not represent your actual opinion.
Yeah, you say these things and you're like, I kind of believe that, but it's not necessarily.
You feel compelled to say something authoritatively, but in reality, in a conversation with someone, you might be much less hardline about it.
Tim basically opened that conversation with, I have always sort of hoped that there would be a breakout comedy game, sort of, so that a comedy genre in gaming would be established, and then people in boardrooms would be like, well, that comedy game made $1 billion, so we need to start funding games with humor in them.
Which, and Rihanna and I didn't necessarily agree. I mean,
what does he mean by comedy genre? Because game genres are usually not...
Well, I just think comedy itself being the selling point of the game.
People will go see a comedy film. Like his argument was people would go see a film specifically because it is a humorous film.
Right, but I mean... Yeah, I understand that, but...
Yeah. Comedy being valued as a unique selling point.
Sure.
Like, I feel like if you set up... We're going to write a comedy game.
Well, I don't know if he actually even said that word.
If that's a top-down directive, like, we're going to write a comedy game, you're quickly going to get a bad Leisure Suit Larry game. You know, like, it's just going to be jokes and jokes and jokes where, like... I mean, Psychonauts is right there, right? On the shelf. Sorry. This is radio. But that game is very funny, but, like, they're still, like, of consequence. You know, and like there are movies that are very funny, but they're like a romance or they're a friendship drama or they're, you know what I mean? It's like comedy is just the thing that like keeps you going moment to moment. Yeah. And that's really what I believe. It's like Monkey Island is a game. Tales of Monkey Island is about like trust, these relationships that Guybrush has with people who are very close to him and how they get strained. But then, you know.
But it's also a million jokes.
Many jokes about leg sweating. And things like this.
Well, that's
he's a leg sweater. He's a total leg sweater. I didn't know that.
That's something that I think
has
always done.
I know he can hold his breath for 10 minutes,
but his legs are sweaty while he does it.
Yeah,
creepy.
That's something that I think has always done a disservice to people's memories of or descriptions of old LucasArts games in particular. Oftentimes, you read stories by people in writing for game websites or whatever, especially when a game is reissued or a remake is made, and
they're
like,
a laugh a minute.
Yeah, these games were just packed to the walls with guffaws and just laugh riot, and this was the funniest game, declaring it the funniest game ever made. And it's, I mean, those games had a lot of funny things in them, but they didn't exist just for the purpose of having you laugh your ass off. And anyone who says they fell out of their chair laughing when they played Monkey Island 1 is probably either making that up or like just not remembering very well.
Yeah, I mean,
that's or not, they're horrible.
Or they're awful
or
people.
They're lying, right, yeah.
You know, because that's not what the experience of playing those games was at all. The humor was like almost greasing the wheels. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't the engine. I mean,
the engine of one is like, oh, I'm this guy who like, it's a very, like, very pure desire. Like, I'm an adolescent. I want to
be
something.
You just said of one, because that reminds me of in The Sopranos where they just use shorthand of in one to like to indicate they're talking about Godfather.
Oh. Yeah, well, yeah. In one, oh,
like
yeah.
You're the guy who works for the venture game company. It's
Godfather.
Yeah, like,
that's true. It's the exact same. Yeah. And except, you know, yeah.
The thing that's kind of interesting, I think, maybe about that is that, like, Tim Schafer advocating for, you know, comedy being kind of the focus of the game and possibly giving rise to more, like, comedy games. Maybe the best stuff he's done in his career is his least, like, overtly comedic.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Full Throttle.
Absolutely.
And Grim
there's
Fandango.
There's, like, five jokes in Full Throttle, well, if that, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of funny
lot
stuff
of jokes,
in Full Throttle, and a lot of it is kind of absurd, but it isn't, like...
comic relief characters in that game.
Yeah.
It's a noir film in the desert.
It does also have to be said that was, like, one single thing that Tim said that we're using in isolation, and it was like the
first
thing
that's funny.
Well, that's exactly what Famous was saying about the idea of the things you say on a panel.
Oh yeah, of course.
Thanks, Boost.
And that happens to me on this fucking podcast. And this podcast isn't even important.
But I mean, to be fair, I've heard Tim Schafer say that before in interviews.
Oh, I know.
Like, years ago.
But I mean,
so I mean, it's definitely a thing.
Agreeing almost for the rest of the thing.
It did. Yeah.
After that, we were really like high fiving.
I mean, obviously, like, a lot of Monkey Island was talked about because there were two people on the panel that worked on a Monkey Island game, but...
I didn't realize... It's like, obviously, you don't not think about that going in.
Yeah.
But, like, up until we're both sitting there being like, so, Guybrush, we've both written for Guybrush. I didn't realize, like, it was happening, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, that was kind of a cool thing for me, personally. Especially going into Monkey Island. And, I mean, we can both talk about this a little bit. We think of the sensibilities of the people who worked on that game. But like I my direct like Grossman when I like was starting on that title.
David Grossman
of
a guy who's at Telltale and also worked on Monkey Island.
He is our creative director and worked on Monkey Island and Day of the Tentacle with Tim. But he said, "Hey, like something Tim did on Monkey Island was kind of bring that sort of like that edge to Guybrush, where he just kind of does asshole things sometimes and says kind of mean things." And it's a bad thing to say, but Guybrush is an asshole for a lot of that game.
No, that's like, a really important part of that character.
Yeah, and I think the Tails was sort of not there yet. He wasn't doing that in the first few episodes, and he's like, "I would like you to try to do that." And it was kind of like, "Oh, okay, I'll just." And it was neat kind of sitting next to him.
Dave's like, "I want you to write like Tim Schafer for this game."
Yeah. I just slunk back to my desk. I was like,
"Oh, okay." When Dave Grossman walks up to you and tells you to write like Tim Schafer, he's like, okay.
I'll do my
I'll
best,
do that
sir.
For you now.
Oh, yeah, I'll just... Yeah.
Thanks for letting me know. I was kind
of... On the other hand, saying make the character more of a dick, I think...
It's also fun, though.
Pretty, that's a pretty followable piece of direction.
Yeah. Because I would say, like, in that episode, like... That's when he just starts fucking over.
Merrick looks like he's in a fucking opium coma right now.
I know.
Merrick's really into this talk.
Oh, but the thing that I was going to bring up is that just it wasn't all just about
this
jokes
is the
jokes
greatest
jokes.
Podcast
like,
Merrick says.
The stuff in Psychonauts about where you sort of flip underneath the world and you end up seeing all the crazy dark stuff and how that game like, will have all these jokes and then occasionally just sucker punch you with a piece of drama. Like that came up as a theme in the talk as well. Not in terms of Psychonauts in general, but just... That's how good comedy tends to work.
Something that I was going to ask about, I didn't make it to the panel either, it's because true. I'm a dick.
Yeah.
Okay, though. So true, God.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you know. I didn't think I could fit in the room with your ego, famous. It's gone to your head, all this fame.
I actually just floated above everybody.
But the actual thing is that, like, and we kind of talked about this a little bit, was... though there are not very many games that are sold outright as being a comedy game and you should come to this game for comedy, I think that funny things happening in games is actually a really big draw for a lot of games, especially like open world games, for instance. Like if you look at
absolutely at
all the stuff they're showing for like Just Cause 2 right now and other games like Mercenaries or the Grand Theft Auto games or whatever, it's like you know those videos that we've seen that's whatever it's called,
GTA Badassery, that's different though,
yeah, but well, I mean a lot of those situations are funny, right? Like
it's ridiculous shit,
yeah, and it's because like you just go into this place where a bunch of unexpected events will happen and they make you laugh your ass off. And you go into that game trying to find just crazy shit that's going to happen. And it's really funny.
But I still feel those systems are built in earnest.
Right.
You know,
well, like, I mean, one of those stalker stories I told last week was like that, where I ran into this place and there was a monster and I ran the other direction and it was bandits and it was fucking Scooby-Doo Hotel Land.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like that was hilarious
for me,
to me.
It's like when that's disconnected from the sort of like the tonal thrust of the game, that pisses me off, actually. Well, like, it's funny, and, like, I mean, I watched you guys play Army of Two the 40th day, like, that one morning when we were over here playing Imperial. And,
it's good cat noise.
Like...
It's kind of good.
It's no bird noise. But, but, like, you guys joke, and you guys are having the best time playing that game. But, like... I don't play games like that. I was just like, oh, God. And you're just like continually running into a wall. And you're like, where's the button? Where's the button? Look at all these animations. When I like throw them all together, he looks ridiculous. And you laugh and you guys are having a great time. Like, oh, this is a great comedy game for you guys.
Well, but
I just want to like eat a bullet because I hate
I do think
I
that's
that.
Different, though. Because I mean, if you...
Like,
if
I play GTA 4 like I'm acting. Like, right. I don't go do stupid stuff. Like, for the first hour of that game, I was like stopping at stoplights.
But I mean, I think that, like, but I think even then,
I actually was really into that in GTA 4 as well.
Yeah, but
like,
I mean,
slowing down to pay the bridge toll. And
but even if you don't play GTA 4, for instance, to make jokes out of it, like just in the course of playing the game, it's like all that the shit that's funniest about games like that is best laid plans stuff, right? Where you're like you're trying to pull off. You know, your mission, you're trying to get away from the cops and, you know, you ramp over something and run into something else and flip on something and land on a dude and it ends up being hilarious.
Well, when the game ends up supporting that by a passerby on the street, I'm going, that shit's ridiculous. That's when it's completely
yeah,
amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah. Always,
and
yeah.
That is actually something that Tim brought up. I think it was in the fourth Metal Gear.
And I told this. Oh, yeah, in the fourth Metal Gear.
He
sorry.
Was talking about how if you point the camera at the cleavage of another
the
character.
The fourth Metal Gear. Do you mean Metal Gear Solid 4?
Sorry, Metal Gear Solid 4.
Okay.
Whatever. He was talking about, I think it was 4. He's talking about
it was a Metal Gear.
It was a more. It was one of the more recent Metal Gear Solid games. He was talking about pointing the camera at the cleavage of a supporting character, and if you leave it there for a certain amount of time, that character will just be like enjoying the view or like, "What are you looking at?" or something. And right. He was just like, "Oh fuck!" And that's
now we know Tim Schafer looks at video.
He
game
said that
boobs.
A friend of his was doing it.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure they were. Yeah.
But that's my favorite thing in those GTA 4 montages is when. Like when cars explode and people are freaked out by stuff, there's weird NPC barks. And when that stuff happens because you've caused it, it's always way more rewarding than when the game doesn't notice that you've made horrible mayhem.
Although sometimes which is totally writing in games.
I think that's where the two come together is that like if the game was incredibly self-serious, you know, just like 100%, then it wouldn't be as funny. You know, you would see something crazy happen, but there needs to be kind of that tone of this stuff's ridiculous, you know, and GTA 4 especially.
Or even just this moment's ridiculous, because you know.
Well, but it makes it. It doesn't shut down the ridiculousness of something that happens by like trying to take itself too seriously, you know. Mm. I don't know. Yeah. So I think tone and unexpected things happening in games like allows comedy to arise in a way that isn't necessarily look at this comedy game, play this game because it's so funny. Mm-hmm. But people play it that way anyway because they know that stuff happens. And I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't want to start marketing games as funny too either. I think that's bad. I think you should just market like Psychonauts is a good example of a game where this should have been marketed as a kid runs away from the circus to join a psychic summer camp or to join a psychic soldier.
I think Psychonauts should have been marketed is go enter people's brains, set things on fire, levitate shit. Invade people's minds and jump on shit. I mean, I think Psychonauts.
I think
you should market it in terms of the active verbs that you do in a
game.
They should have
looked forward into the future into how they marketed BioShock, basically, and then marketed it that way.
The same.
I mean, it's BioShock was entirely marketed on those terms. It was like they didn't sell that game by talking about the like incredible atmosphere and this amazing arc of this man Andrew Ryan. I mean, they sold that game by talking about all the things you as a character as a player can do in terms of. I mean,
if your game has a bunch of unique, really cool sounding active verbs, that is exactly how you should sell your game.
When
you press a button, what crazy shit happens that you can't do?
So I'm totally wrong.
Yeah, fair God, you God, idiot. Why were you even on that panel or on this podcast?
I'm so sorry,
Vanaman.
More like retarded Vanaman.
I heard it was a really
good. It is more
panel.
Like that.
It is quite similar too. I actually told your story.
Oh, really?
I mentioned you, not by name. That would have been strange.
He said Hot Scoops.
You just said Hot Scoops.
So my pal Hot Scoops was playing Brutal Legend, and then Tim immediately was like, please. Oh, he's like, is this a bug? And I was like, no. But I told the story about you, like, peeling all on that dude's face.
Yeah.
What? It got a good laugh. So that was
really?
So why don't you tell Steve your story? Steve was playing Brutal Legend.
Scoops was playing Brutal Legend.
Hot Scoops.
Isn't it terrible when you're trying to tell a story and people just keep yelling your
God, I know
your idle thumbs
horrible
nickname.
BM Bronstring.
We've brute forced your nickname on this.
My thumbs.
I did
tag.
The most unfamous stuff today.
Famous man.
Yeah, I was telling you, like, I think it was must have been before your panel since you mentioned it. That Brutal Legend has a bunch of, you know, great lines and acting and improvisation and everything. But the funniest and most memorable thing that happened to me in that game was just, again, something that kind of arose out of the fact that you have this car that has physics, you know, it's like this hot rod with these big ass wheels on the back, and there are these like big huge hulking guys that have like the giant fists that run around that are enemies, you know. And at some point I was in the hot rod and I started to back up, and when I started to back up the camera turned around and I saw there was one of these giant guys behind me, and so I just like backed up far enough that the physics made my back tire like go up onto his face as he was like standing there, and I hit the gas and it like peels out on his face and like, escape. And I was like, that's hilarious. And yeah, you know, and it's like a very different thing than a well-crafted and acted
Zinger.
Line,
yeah.
You know, but it makes an impact on the player because it's so unique to their own experience, you know, with the system.
Would and you have been pleased if the game had been prepared for that and actually had...
Oh, my face!
Right, if the guy would be like, fuck, as your car was driving
away. My beautiful face!
Would that have made you more happy or less happy?
I would have been totally cool with that.
Okay.
I mean, like, I agree with you that supporting that and recognizing it, like, You always want to acknowledge the player doing stuff in your game.
I'll just keep bringing up things that Tim said, apparently.
Yeah, because he did say that. Yeah.
But
he said,
he said, from in his point of view at least, and it's a thing that I think is interesting, especially for a game like Brutal Legend, is that regardless of the actual quality of your AI in terms of it being sort of an artificial brain that can interpret your actions as a player, or that it can think for itself, rather, what is important is that it pretends that it knows what you're doing by having things to account for all the weird shit you do, which is a thing that... That's pretty much all adventure games are. So, and that's the thing that he tried to do with Psychonauts pretty hard. But I think that's like, if you can think of make a guy scream when you peel out on his face,
right?
You think that there might be a more intelligent system behind that than there actually is.
Yeah.
One of the funniest things I saw in the Grand Theft Auto 4 Badassery series, which we talked about a long time ago on Idle Thumbs, but and I still don't know if this was supported intentionally or as a result of some other like NPC system was. Like just this, you know, I don't even remember what led to this, but it was just one of the big fucking pileups where fucking cars are falling on top of pedestrians and everything's fucking exploding and shit's going crazy. And then this lady walks by and just like in the most ultra Brooklyn accent, she's just like, "That looks expensive."
Oh yeah,
and it's one of the funniest fucking things I had heard in ages.
Yeah,
and I have no idea like what that was actually in response to, but the fact that it coincided with this,
right?
Like this
I think it was probably the two cars crashed into each other event.
And she's like, "That's a fender bender." That
yeah,
looks like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
But instead, every car in New York.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I mean, some of that stuff is super, super specific. Where they were just searching for very specific cases. Okay. Where like there was like, you know, a guy can commit a crime and the cop goes after him, and if the cop finds him, he like leads him back to his car at gunpoint. You know, right. And I saw this happen a few times, and I was like, I don't know what happens if I kind of fuck with these guys. And so like a cop was doing that, and I rolled my car up real slow and just kind of like bumped him.
which guy?
The cop. Uh-huh. And so he like stumbles and like drops his gun or whatever. Like, and then the criminal goes, "Thanks, buddy." And runs away. and I did it a couple more times, and there were additional barks of him being like, "Thanks a lot, bro." And like,
yeah, "Thanks, bro."
Yeah, and so like they caught the case.
Dropped that retard.
So they caught the case of, you know, guy gets
right. It's
freed
gotta be one
from
of those things where
cop,
just when playtesting, you're like, "Oh, I wonder if I can do this." Oh shit. Okay. Write that one down.
We'll write a line for that. Yeah.
Almost makes you just want to walk behind playtesters with a notebook. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And that is kind of
stupid shit people do.
Yeah. And that's kind of the, you know, the that's where you really nail it when you are like, we'll put something, a little thing to acknowledge you did something awesome.
It's such a good reward when you do something stupid and hilarious and then the game's like, yeah, please do more of these things.
Yeah, right.
Because you will in fact find more of the game by doing it.
Yeah.
So yeah, good panel.
Yeah.
Good job, Famous.
Got some good reader mails?
Sure.
We got a lot of reader mail, actually.
Yeah, we have a ton of reader mail.
That sucks.
You suck. You're the worst guy.
You fucking bastard. Stop sending stuff.
I was telling Steve he was a bastard, not the readers.
Oh, no, but he said the worst, and I said, well, it's good that they send things, right?
Fred Zellany
I'm just visiting. Don't listen to me. I'll be gone tomorrow.
Oh, this is a really good email. Okay.
Oh, thanks.
Except...
I tried.
Don't oversell it.
Okay.
This is the best
kind of
email
shitty email
ever sent
I'm about
to
read. Jesus.
From
Dear the Idle Thumbs Game Gold Pod Boost, an unexpected...
Oh, it's the best one now.
I always read that because it always causes Steve
hates when a joke is made in an email.
That doesn't
you want
count
all
as a
the
joke.
Jokes. That was a great joke.
Dear reader, that was probably pretty good.
Yeah. All right, so here's the email that's actually
Scoop's
good.
Gold Blast Pod. Face.
An unexpectedly touching moment in a game, he says. I ran a pickup group through a heroic dungeon, and at first, I assume he's talking about World of Warcraft, and at first I thought one of the players was just a jerk because he was talking about nonsense and being chatty in a way that sounds like sarcastic jerkiness. I was brushing him off and ignoring him, and then one of the random players whispered to tell me that he and the other players were all actually a family that played together. He explained that the chatty player, his son, was a special needs kid. Suddenly, everything clicked, and I realized he wasn't actually being sarcastic at all. After every boss, he asked if he had won, and when we beat the last boss, the warlock, his mother, said, "Okay, say thank you to the tank." And the hunter said, "Thank you, tank." It was a better reward than any sort of loot. Maybe I'm particularly susceptible to it because I grew up playing video games with my own parents. I learned a lot of vocabulary on my father's knee as he played Infocom games with me. So while I've always known the benefits of family gaming and how empowering it can be for a kid to be on a level playing field with his parents, I hadn't ever actually seen it in action from the outside. It was really heartwarming. With games like Bioshock 2 and Heavy Rain dealing with stories involving family matters and parent-child relationships, the last place I expected to find a harming family story was from a bunch of orcs in World of Warcraft. Great to hear on the air again. Insert reference here, Fred Zellany.
That's the nicest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's totally adorable.
That's great. Really nice.
That's awesome.
Do you guys have memories of playing video games with your parents at all?
Absolutely not.
My parents don't even know what I do. Yeah.
My parents vaguely. Yeah. No, I was not allowed to have video games as a kid. Jeez. That's why I'm a PC gamer, by the way.
I didn't play a whole lot of games with my parents, but my dad, I guess when he was working in San Francisco in the like late 70s and early 80s, played the Star Wars arcade game. So he took my brother and I to play the Star Wars arcade game a few times, and he played Pilot Wings with us.
Nice.
Hey, those are the two games that my dad thought were cool.
Yeah. I had a good, like, the phrase of that guy that Fred Delaney in his email mentioned that was like giving a child and parent a way to be kind of like on an even playing field thing. Like, it makes me think my dad and I played like Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego together, like when I was 7 or mm-hmm. whatever. And he, you know, would like help me figure it out, but not just like, you know, steamroll it, you know. Right. And so like he let me feel smart and like look up stuff to figure out the puzzles, and we kind of like were figuring that stuff out together. You know, it made me feel like, oh man, me and my dad are both working on a problem together, and you know, it makes you feel better as a kid because you know.
Yeah.
Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego is such a gold game.
That was a good game.
Yeah.
Gone gold game.
Yeah, and
it was like that.
We had awesome, like, he you know, business dude went on business trips a lot and stuff, and we would like play Carmen Sandiego over the phone. Like, I'd have like a corded phone, and I had learned enough to read or whatever when I was like 7. I would like tell him what the clue was, and I don't know. Yeah, Carmen Sandiego was a good dad game in the 80s.
That's awesome.
In the event, I need to just clarify, my parents know what I do. If my mom were to listen to this podcast, which is not outside the realm of something she would
she
needs to know that, Mom, I love you, and I know you know what I do, and my dad and I play Duck Hunt together, and we have a great family. But I picture that family like The Incredibles almost. It's very cool that it just flattened. You know what I mean? It's right. Very cool. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Mrs. Vanneman, horse bag.
Oh, what does that mean? Oh. What does that mean?
Nothing.
My mother. What does it mean?
It's a peripheral for the Nintendo Wii.
How to get burned.
For riding a horse.
How to get burned? I just fell into the like the idle thumbs pit of reference. I'm just being stabbed with sharp sticks.
Keep your stupid mask.
Me and my mom actually just fell into a horrible pit of reference, and I'm just trying to protect her from pain.
So anyway, this
I'll
next email
kill you.
Probably about feces.
Yeah. With a hat on it.
Dear idle thumbs, I'm taking a poo.
What?
Oh,
oh man, we had so
you totally nailed it. Wow, how did you know?
Yeah.
That's not what it's about. That's all not right. What it says.
Charlie writes,
we
welcome back.
We talked about poo a lot earlier today.
Oh, thanks for clarifying that, Jake. Why did what?
Famous poo.
Your own poo?
No. Oh, that's funny.
Oh,
see
man.
What you did there?
Thanks. And that whoa. That,
you walked me right in.
We're done.
You walked yourself right into that. All right, Charlie writes, welcome back, Thumbs. Video games crossing into reality. Welcome back after your absence from the world of pods feels strange. Okay, well, he goes on about that for a while. Anyway, I have a story about playing video games far too long and changing how you view the world. Plenty of people have had the I should steal a car thing happen after too much GTA. But my rational decision-making breakdown... What, you haven't had that?
No, I've never stolen a car.
I've never
GTA.
Stolen
or
a car.
To.
That's not the point, is that
no,
you actually steal a car.
The two ones that are cited all the time are, I could steal that car and run that light, or I bet I could pick that up with my Katamari that is my car.
Yeah,
yep. I definitely had both. I can take out those parking meters.
For sure.
Okay, I can roll those up.
Anyway.
I
didn't mean to be contrarian.
Yeah, well, you're... So this is not the experience that guy had, but he's referencing it for kind of a baseline here. So he says, my rational decision-making breakdown happened after too much Doom. I mean Doom 1 as a kid in the 90s. I'd been playing for hours and hours with the clipping shut off. Ids, pop, id, whatever the code was. Realizing I was starving, I stumbled upstairs to the kitchen to grab a snack from the cupboard. As I stood in front of it, I actually had this thought process. Man, I should open this cupboard and grab some Doritos. But wait, the clipping is shut off. I don't need to open the door after all. Whereupon, I smashed my hand into the cupboard door, bruising it extremely badly and waking up my parents in the process.
Video games don't cause violent behavior.
Yeah, let's just keep that email away from guys like Jack Thompson and things like this.
I think that guy's in jail now or something.
He's disbarred. He's no, jail. He got disbarred in Florida.
I think he was shanked.
He was disbarred, though. That's a fact.
He was disbarred.
Yeah.
Chalk one up for video games.
Disbarred that guy.
He actually did basically just disbar himself by throwing his body against the rocks of video games for years.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Is it?
No. It's too bad for video games, Rodkin.
Stephen Lavington writes, Dear Idle Thumbs Podcast, not a dream or a case of someone assaulting me because of your show, I'm afraid.
Oh.
Way back in the days of the original NES, I played Super Mario Bros. 3 for so long, squinting at a shitty 13-inch screen television. 13-inch screen television that I actually became nauseous. Even today, if I see any 8-bit style graphics like the 8-bit version of Left 4 Dead, I get ill and headachy. Do any of you guys have Pavlovian type reactions as a result of video games? Cheers, Steve Lavington. I don't know if any of you actually do, but I figured it out.
I had a weird experience with that today that I can actually share about GDC.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So
whenever
you know,
I go to GDC, I vomit all over the place. Signed to Tim Langdell.
Wow.
That guy was at GDC, by the way.
I know.
Yeah.
He went to like indie game stuff, and I bet he was popular.
I'm buying that trademark.
But Ian Bogost, who's like a games researcher, academic kind of guy, has made a number of games. And the one that he was showing at the Independent Games Festival at GDC was a game called A Slow Year, which is like he actually programmed it for the Atari like 2600 or whatever and printed on a cartridges and the whole thing. But it's like there are four seasons, and each season is a different game that is about just sort of like meditatively like waiting for stuff to happen and like moving slowly and everything. It's a very like tone, like slow down and whatever. And so one of the games was it was summer and there's like a rainstorm, and the goal of the game is supposed to be simulating like you're watching a thunderstorm and lightning happens, and then you know you're kind of trying to predict how long it's going to take for the thunder to, you know, for the thunderclap to follow it. And so you're supposed to wait for lightning in the game and then press the button when you think the thunder will, you know, start. And so I was waiting, and there's like a long gap between the lightning and everything, and I'm waiting and staring at it and stuff, and then the lightning happens, and I try to jam the button as quickly as I can, you know, like in time with the lightning. I'm like, video games trained me to do that. I was supposed to wait and do it when when the thunder's supposed to come. But apparently it's just like, I'm in the mindset of video game, and when thing happens on screen, shoot, you're supposed to react as quickly as possible. Yeah, and so I definitely was that Pavlovian in that sense. It was just like, flash, press button. No. Oh, bad brain. Hate you, video games.
Yeah.
It was a very concrete thing.
Video games do turn us into twitchy, fucking nervous assholes. It's really horrible.
I don't know about anybody else.
I don't really have anything like that.
I like your story, though.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Story.
All right.
Crummy writes,
there you go, Charlie.
Yeah,
that was a story for you,
you're
Charlie.
Good with name remembering. That's two for two.
Yeah, you're two for two. Fred Zanoni, yeah. Charlie.
Famous old two for two for they call you.
Crummy writes, brief stalker experience. Hi, Thumbs. Short stalker cop experience. Wow, that's a cool acronym. I just loaded up the game and tried.
I was totally on a different page. Like, sorry, stalker the game. Sorry, I was like, I thought he was just stalking somebody or had been stalked in real life.
But crazy stalker experience.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Yeah, that's what it sounded like to me.
Nick Brecken followed me.
I was hoping you'd keep going.
I wasn't.
It was funny that I like that you disclaimed it like four times. I was hoping you'd continue if I didn't interrupt you.
No, I'm done.
But you didn't. You didn't amuse me enough. So he says, I just loaded up the game and tried to speak to the very first NPC I met. Of course, you're just thrust into the radioactive wilderness without a guide or hint, and so when he demands I lower my weapon, I fumble around on my keyboard to do so until I hit the G key, which happens to drop my AK-47 on the ground. As I realize what I've done, he casually saunters over, picks up my weapon, and walks away. Oh,
and you're like, hey, wait.
What's the button to say give it back? I'm now all alone in the aforementioned radioactive wilderness, except now I don't have a weapon. I ended up finding a crappy pistol, and I tried to shoot him in the head to retrieve my weapon, upon which I was jumped by all of his friends who came out of nowhere, and I was forced to reload my game after they slaughtered me. Anyway, keep on casting. Love what you guys do, Crummy. That's a good story.
The number of stories of people who are just brutalized in Stalker is really exciting to me.
But that's hilarious, though.
Like, drop your weapon.
Because
thanks.
That's like
what?
You know, because he's fumbling around. It's like this guy's like, lower your weapon. And you're like, wait, what? I don't understand. And then you like drop it, and he just picks it up and leaves. That's really funny to me.
Yeah.
Because I can totally imagine that like happening in the world.
But I love that behavior in the game.
Yeah, me too.
That like guys actually seek out things that are useful to them.
Well, remember the time you sold a dude a weapon?
Yeah.
And as soon as you sold it, he just like immediately equipped it. He's like, yeah, this is better.
Yeah.
I'm just going to use this.
It was awesome. Because he had like some shitty pistol, and I was like, oh, I don't need this shotgun, and sold it to him. And we exit like the vending screen, and he just like, Oops, pulls out shotgun. Yeah. Because oh, you don't cool. see that in games, but it totally makes sense.
Right.
It felt
yeah,
really
yeah,
logical.
Just disappearing into the store mechanic and not actually into that yeah. guy's inventory.
But he's like, yeah. oh, this is a sweet shotgun.
Yeah. I mean, if you sell a bunch of stuff to someone and then kill him, all that stuff will be on him. Like, yeah. it's his. Yeah.
Wow. That makes me want that game to just have like two or three notable hats.
So, just pass around the game.
Right, so if you get a weird...
You could, if dude, you get, someone could totally mod that. I mean, that would be a totally
It would be really amusing.
Thing.
Yeah, if you got... Yeah. If so, well, you gave I mean, someone just a really extreme yellow, like, ear flap hat, and then you just... that would just sort of trade throughout the world.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, you give the you give that to the guy, he's like, oh, man. Boop!
Yeah.
And then, like, 4 hours later, you see just some fat dude walking around with his hat on.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be a totally doable mod. I would love to
yeah.
see that.
Because I don't know if those guys actually, if they actually simulate them trading with each other.
No, but you
but
could
probably
could. Hack that in.
Yeah. Because,
yeah.
I mean, there was a sort of similar thing, not with that chaining thing, but in Fallout 3 with your, like, squad members, you know? Like, they were just pack mules for you, but they would use the best thing right. in their inventory. So I have, like, you know, they don't have any helmet or whatever, and I give them, like, Thomas Jefferson's wig just to hold on to for me, and I look back and they've just got a powdered wig on.
Yeah, that's all I have.
That's great.
Video games are
keeps
good.
My head warm. Shut up.
This will be Jake's favorite email. Phil Guai writes to the Idle Thumbs podcast.
Oh, classic.
Great day, guys. Whatever. On a bizarre note, Jake, you look an awful lot like my favorite musician, Stan Rogers. At least you do in the photo in the Idle Thumbs episode 50 blog post. That's about it.
So what Phil. He means is that guy looks like David Cage.
Yeah. I don't know anything. I don't know if that's like complimentary or what. Like I just want one more thing introduced that Jake apparently looks
I
like.
I look like everything, apparently.
Big Bird, Max Headroom, David Cage, and video games.
He didn't send a comparison photograph
no,
like with David Cage.
No, I don't know.
The link.
Maybe.
Come on, Phil.
Well, I don't look like that guy.
Yeah, if you're gonna say that Jake looks like someone, at least send photographic evidence.
I mean, yeah. If that's the case, this will always be included in the blog. But otherwise, I won't believe it.
Okay. Shea Pierce writes, Cold War strategy game. In the Scoopshorn episode, you guys say that a strategy game about the Cold War would be sweet. Chris Crawford made this game. It's Balance of Power, and if you haven't played it, I'm pretty sure there's a version around that's playable on modern Windows PCs. You should play it. It's very cool, and I'd like to hear your opinion on it. It's very different from most games. It's like playing a bunch of menus, which sounds boring, but it's actually quite engrossing. Love the cast. You guys are the ginkiest. Shay.
That sound that you hear is Nick Brecken downloading that game.
Yeah. No, that's... I've
definitely heard of that
I've
game.
Heard of that game for sure. I've never played it. I'm sort of slightly a little too late for a lot of the Chris Crawford stuff.
The other thing that you guys could play is Shadow President, because it also is I think that's what it's called. It's a similar, like, you are essentially controlling all of the kind of stuff that's totally unacknowledged during the Cold War, and trying to be successful, you know, but like you can just fail and end up with a nuclear war.
Right.
You know, because of all the stuff that normal people don't even know about that was happening during the Cold War and shit just silently spiraling out of control and ending in catastrophe.
Yeah.
I think that stuff was a lot easier to make game mechanics out of when the games were essentially all text.
Right.
Like, it's much harder to turn that into like units, whatever.
Yeah. No, that's true. That was an advantage in a sense those games had when it came to that kind of representation. Aaron Meldrum, this is another Call of Pripyat story, if you guys have the patience for that.
Oh, yeah.
Another stalker story.
Okay.
Aaron Meldrum writes, hey, the Idle Thumbs podcast. I've enjoyed your discussion about Call of Pripyat and find my reaction and impressions of the game are following a very similar arc to yours. But one thing I think that gets lost in a lot of discussions of the emergent gameplay mechanics are some really interesting emergent storytelling instances. One good example happened as I was out looking for tools to upgrade my weapons. 10 or so hours into the game, I spotted a warehouse on the map that looked like it could be a good place to look, so I took off. As I trekked the distance over there and began to draw near, I noticed there were bodies everywhere. I hadn't remembered any recent emissions, so the only thing I could conclude was that there was some firefight that had left them there. Not knowing if anyone was left, I began to creep through the multitudes of crates as cover while I worked my way through the main building. Upon reaching the warehouse looking inside, I realized something. This was the same place where I saved a guy from a bunch of bandits much earlier. It was pitch black when I busted him out before, so I was only able to recognize the place by the lights inside the warehouse. I then had a rapid series of thoughts going back from weird, I'm back here, to wow, I wonder how this all happened. And then I realized there actually hadn't been a shootout since I was last here. It was me that had killed all these people.
I am the murderer. I looked down, there's blood on my hands.
This was oddly affecting, making me feel both like a badass and also just an ass, because it was a lot of guys. What struck me as so interesting about it was the reason it managed to be such an effective plot twist for me was that it was the result of a bunch of random decisions I had made and founded my circumstances I found myself in earlier. If I'd even had night vision when I had done the mission the first time, the experience would have ended up being completely different. It was an interesting experience that hit me in a rather different way than a lot of the more gameplay-centric mechanics that result from the systems. I thought it was a cool story, and I've really enjoyed hearing other people's stories from the game, so I wanted to share. Glad you guys are back, and keep on casting your pods, Aaron, Marilyn. P.S. Yeah. I still didn't find any tools.
I love that story. Like, very good story. The thing, because, I mean, you can totally imagine how that would translate to like an actual film, you know, where it's like there's some guy who's just like desperately fighting with like, you know, a flashlight attached to his pistol or something and just like, you know, shooting at attackers that he doesn't really have, you know, like a full idea of how many people what the outcome really
is. He's being purely reactive.
Yeah. And then it's in the dark and it's just kind of silent. And he's like, I guess there's nobody else here, leaves. And then, you know, comes back
in the daylight
or when the electricity's back on or whatever. And it's just kind of like really like, you know, like unnerved by all of the destruction that he caused by surviving, you know, and that's what happened to this player. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also, it's also cool because I know the part he's talking about, and I did it a totally different way. I just came in like the back. I like climbed over a fence and like went into this room where, well, that you can't really climb a fence, but I jumped on boxes and then, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It's a video game. And I went over this fence and I just went into the back room and like killed one guard outside and went into this room where this guy was and just like went out again. Whereas this guy just sort of blindly charged in through the front, just murdering everybody. Basically.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's a really awesome thing.
Man, speaking of the emissions, I have a really cool small moment as well. That's just like attention to detail. But like we were saying, there are these emissions that are like radiation storms in the game that you have to hide from by going inside a building. And like the other AIs in the world also try to hide inside the buildings, like, you know, the bandits and stuff like that. But there are also other things that are AIs that aren't really intelligent that are in the world, you know? And one time I went inside, you know, an emission was coming. I went inside this abandoned factory, waited out the emission, and then I came back outside and I looked on the ground. I was like, what is that? And there were like just dead crows like lying on the ground outside of the warehouse. And I was like, oh man, the emission killed a flock of birds that, you know, had no conscience of what was going on. And they all just like fell out right outside of my shelter, you know, and it totally random, but like really awesome detail.
That's hardcore.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like that happen. That's really amazing.
Yeah.
We like this game.
Well, I'm going to play this video.
It's okay.
Game.
It's fine.
You like it.
It's an okay
I do
game.
Like it.
Any other
ones?
You guys
ones? Do have as an outsider, you have an uncanny ability to make somebody who doesn't play everything want to play this strange game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys did make me play Dawn of War 2, though, and I wasn't really into it.
Well, I didn't mean
that. That's your fault.
It was you and Nick.
No, I still think it's a really good game.
But the thing about it is that, like, you and we and whatever are, I think, capable of making stuff that we are sort of into as a deep niche sound really attractive. But if you're not actually into that kind of game, you still might not like it.
Well, whatever. I'm still going to pretend every game is the best game.
I think every game is best.
Oh, man. Casey, well, then no game is. Casey Kramer asks, will any of you guys be attending PAX East? Far Cry 2 reference Casey Kramer. Oh. Carner. Sorry.
What?
Jake's going to PAX East.
I think I'm going to PAX East.
Where does that take place? What city?
Boston. East. Oh.
It takes place in the East.
The East. I see. The Orient. Well, that sounds like a wonderful trip.
I don't think anyone else in this room is going to it. I'm not sure.
I don't think I am, no.
I know that I'm not.
I'm not.
If you want to meet Jake Video Games Rodkin, go to PAX East.
You'll have to find me at PAX.
look for the guy that looks like David Cage.
Big Bird.
Max Headroom.
And that other guy, that musician guy.
And Jake Rodkin.
Oh. No, I don't think he looks.
No, he looks nothing like Jake Rodkin.
Yeah, it's weird.
Next.
He also looks nothing like Jackie Rodkins.
That is true. That doesn't look like him.
No. Which is probably for the best.
That Lenny, bot named Scoops does look like me, though.
It's really good that there's a bot named Scoops.
Yeah.
A bot named Scoops.
Also, that's my favorite.
And also, that was a really cool movie. I mean, this is... Sorry. No, but that was cool. the being then bots getting named with that that Gene Tonic.
Yeah, yeah. One of our programmers just kind of like thought that it was an idea that had just been kicked around like much earlier, and he was like, "Oh yeah, we could totally do that." And the feature just kind of appeared one day, and we're like, "That's the best thing."
It's weird.
And then the designers got to go in and just edit a text file to put a bunch of stupid names.
I actually got much more attached to my bots in Bioshock 2 than I did in Bioshock 1 for some reason, and then I didn't equip that Tonic until way later.
Oh yeah.
So. And then I was even more attached to them. And like it was like I had this like little family of pets.
Well, that's how you played Bioshock 1, too, isn't it? You got a bunch of drones following you around, and then...
Yeah, it felt very powerful.
You just had an army of robots following you through the game.
Yeah, but that felt more like this is my army of robots. And like in Bioshock 2, I felt like these are my buddies. It was very strange.
It's
funny, just giving them names actually kicked it up a notch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and there are additional tonics that like let you, you know,
summon them.
Well, yeah, there was the summoning, mm-hmm. and then there was upgrading it so you summon more powerful bots, and there were tonics to make the bots mm-hmm. more, you know, have more hit points so they wouldn't be destroyed so easily. And
yeah, I maxed out all that stuff. I was all about that.
I mean, I'm totally a controller kind of player, so I loved having hypnotize and security command 2 or 3, and just always having like a hypnotized splicer and 2 bots.
I never used hypnotize. I forgot about it.
You should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would like hypnotize. Oh, because I mean, the third level of it is hypnotize Big Daddy from Bioshock 1,
right.
And the first level is Enrage from Bioshock 1, but the mid level is you charge it up and then you can just hypnotize any splicer in the game. So you can have like a teleporter splicer following you around.
Oh, crazy.
And he's just your buddy. Wow. And if a guy gets pissed off at you, you will throw. He'll throw fireballs at it. It has a lifespan. It but times out after it, like I don't know how long it is.
When
but
it times
like
out, does he just really? Does he turn on you?
He has a specific bark that is breaking out of it, and then he gets mad.
Okay, cool. I literally never did it, but
really?
Yeah, not once.
I like it a lot, but I mean, I knew about it. I was in the unique position to know it existed and that it was cool, so of course I used it. But the main thing to do was like hypnotize a guy, have him follow you around until there's nobody around and you feel like he might go aggro, and then just shotgun him
and
in the back
like,
of the head.
And just give him some like the mice and men treatment. Yeah. Like, yeah, well, it's terrible.
I
mean,
on the other hand, I guess you could just hypnotize him again and it would refresh it.
I really enjoyed hypnotizing Big Daddies in the first game, but it scared the fuck out of me because they moved so goddamn fast. And
yeah.
You come around a corner and then just boom, 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 boom. And then it's like this sort of happy dog is there. But you know that like at any second he could just drill your face.
Except, I mean, the thing is that with the Big Daddies, you didn't really have that problem because
I know, but I didn't
they
know
just go back
first.
To being neutral, you know? Whereas with splicers, they will get mad at you when it wears off.
The one time that wore off was in the middle of a firefight.
Oh, friendly fire.
Oh, and you just
and
he
scared
just,
the shit
out
of
took
me.
A ricochet off
he
the
just
head.
Went and calmed down, and then boom, I just popped him in the head, and he turned and just chased.
Oh, man.
No, my friend! No! Oh, God! And then my face was drilled, and it was the worst.
Well, but
if you
shoot a hypnotized Big Daddy while they're friendly to you, they will also get pissed off.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean,
I
past a certain threshold, you can't just hypnotize them and then
maybe I was just
them,
just firing bullets at this guy. Anyway,
pretty good video game. Any more reader mail?
Yeah,
didn't mean to derail reader mail though.
This
it's
guy
totally fine.
This guy has
reader mail spends a lot of time being derailed generally.
Yeah,
which is all
that's
right.
How it works. This guy has a Fallout 3 story, I guess, inspired by Stalker stories. So. Scott writes
Fallout 3 based on Stalker Call of Duty.
No one actually asks questions anymore.
A novel
people
by Sapphire.
Send,
anecdotes.
Yeah,
just an anecdote theater.
Yeah, no, it's totally true. Actually, sometimes they do ask questions and I don't read them because they're not that interesting. But
wow,
thanks, right. Readers.
Well, people send a lot of other interesting stuff. All right, so Scott writes scary game moments. While this doesn't have the same fear factor that Remo had some with his Stalker stories, I did recently have a very panic-inducing moment in Fallout 3. I'm quite behind on the times, but I'm slowly and methodically making my way through the game I was playing last night. I just come across the raider camp at Evergreen Mills and picked off all the raiders. There's a super mutant behemoth in that camp, captured in an enclosed electrical fence area. Being a lower level, I was still pretty freaked out by any kind of high-level monster. I shot at him with a few random weapons, then decided to start tossing grenades at him so I could get the XP for killing him. Unfortunately, my very first grenade throw rolled down a slight incline and right back into the generator that was holding him in. That explosion blew up the generator and the fence became unelectrified, at which point the super mutant immediately burst from his enclosure and charged me. I had no time to react and basically screamed aloud in panic terror and started to run away from him. He chased me and promptly killed me, which was made worse because I hadn't saved the entire time. I took out the raider camp and thus had to redo the entire camp fight with 10 or so raiders. Fallout 3 is extremely good at creating spooky, evocative settings, and I'm usually pretty panicky when I explore buildings, too. First time I saw a glowing or radioactive ghoul, I also had a similar panic-inducing situation. Your friend in time, Scott Soggy Bagel. P.S. Obligatory wizard shout-out. That's for Steve.
Chris is just adding additional ones.
Yeah, right. Also horseback trine.
Yeah.
Horseback is fine.
Really? You're just totally arbitrary then.
Well, horseback is just a good word.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's all. Yeah. I just have nothing against horseback. That's all.
Okay. But yeah, that's a good story.
Yeah.
It's another one that kind of feels like it could have been a quick scene from a movie.
Where it's yeah, like, where it's just like a grenade slow. Like,
oh, shit.
It does a shoulder roll. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. And he's definitely right about Fallout 3 being really good at making you feel creeped out and oppressed when, like, exploring a building. The fucking Germantown police station is the most, just like, it most kind of, like, repulsive. You don't want to be in there. There's some good atmosphere in that game.
It's true.
And it should be played by all.
Yeah.
Car horns.
Scoop's Thanks. Horn.
This is Scoop's horn, just a little, you know.
Just a little him.
Cool. Well, there's probably some more mail, but that was a lot of mail. So
it was an appropriate amount of mail.
Yeah.
You all right?
No. Oh,
okay.
Video games.
I never need anything.
Famous will help you out.
Game.
It's your favorite name.
It is. It's the best.
It's been good having you on, Famous. It's fun.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. It's been really nice. Talking about video games.
Yeah, that's what we did, actually. I guess it is.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll be back someday with another episode, probably.
Say bye, Merrick.
Questions at Outthumbstack. Questions at
Outthumbstack. See you, Merrick.
Questions at Outthumbstack.
Bye-bye.
If I'm going to sleep forever now.
Or you can go to our forums at
idlethumbs.net/forums.
Yes.
If you have a question or a story about video games, but really a question.
Yeah, you can actually send us questions, but make it good.
No pressure.
Also, you might have sent in a good question and we just didn't get to it yet. Or you could have sent in a shitty question and I deliberately didn't read it. So it's up to you.
Be self-aware.
No, there probably were some good questions in there we just didn't get to, but
there definitely were some shitty questions in there that you didn't want to read.
Wow.
I'm sure all the questions were
everyone
great.
Wrote great questions.
There's no all such right. thing as a shitty question.
Just okay. a shitty reader.
Just shitty people
writing it.
If you would like to be subject to this abuse, please email questions@idlethumbs.net.
We would like to make a statement. Idle Thumbs would like to just state that they were very tired and after GDC and maybe do not mean everything that they said just now when they called you all a bunch of fucking assholes. I didn't send in stupid shit.
Say bye, Merrick.
God, this episode is
bye,
over.
Merrick.
I bet we're working. I bet cumulatively we're working on like less than 20 hours of sleep.
Yeah,
on,
I know.
And over the past
man hours.
Like Adam
sleep hours.
I've had 7.
Yes.
2 nights.
Yeah.
Thanks, I guess that ended at some point.
Just fade it out.
Yeah.
Oh man, I have to fucking
video games.
Sleep for a day.
Sunday is a good day for that.
I'm going to sleep. I'm going to be like I'm going to be like the Lord tomorrow.
Walk away.
Bad-ab.
Say bye, Merrick.
Bye.
Merrick.
Yeah, you're my trooper for even being. Yeah, why are you here?
What are you doing? I'm listening to your podcast.
Yeah, but you're bored by it.
I hate
it.
Yeah. To another one.
Yeah, but you hate it every second of it.
Yep.
That'll be the fucking theme. All of us whistling it.
What?
God damn it.
This is retarded.
Nope.
Now they're doing again. Jump.
Weird.
Whoa.
Wow. What are you doing? Your voice is terrible.
Apparently, it's
Steve is an alien.
We play that backwards and Satan comes out.
Cultic.
It's just like play Deadly Premonition.
What the fuck? What?
It's play Deadly Premonition.
Oh, oh shit! The entirety of their marketing campaign. Video
games. GDC podcasts are for some reason called Conf Grenades.
I really like.
Well, it's because it's a conf grenade from TF one, I guess. TF Classic.
It's a concussion grenade.
Yeah.
And the PAX episodes are standalone expansion packs.
Yeah.
Worst.
Oh, like PAX, I guess.
Yeah, terrible.
That's good.
Oh man.
There it's yeah, just to good. Make people both laugh and cry when they see their RSS feed show up and just go, oh.
No, it's great.
I like them. I love
yeah,
it.
No, they're hilarious. Yeah, it makes me wish there was a third convention. I guess we could do one for E3.
Well, I mean,
but it would just be the E3 suicide pact, basically.
it's the only time that you guys devolve into the standard like naming convention for video game websites or video game podcasts, which is like Spawn Point or something. You know,
right. Voice chat.
Yeah,
exactly. Online chat. Yeah. With
multiplayer lobby.
Multiplayer lobby.
Split screen. I mean,
yeah, split screen. That would definitely be one.
Yeah.
And that would have a slash between split screen.
Oh, that reminds me of a fake indie game.
Oh, yeah. 2D Dreams.
2D Dreams. Yeah.
2D Dreams?
2D, as in 2D boy.
Oh, not like all the dreams in a time.
No, it was our not executed plan to start the fake IGF entries hashtag on Twitter.
That started Friday morning, and then we never consummated or made that a thing.
Should've done it.
You love the word consummate.
I love consomme, actually.
Oh,
so
2D consomme.
All of the consomme, please. Consomme.
We have Sean Tutti Consomme Vanna.
Yeah, Tutti Consomme.
Famous Tutti Consomme. Tutti
Consomme. It sounds like somebody from like South Africa.
Yeah. It sounds like a guy who won the Boston Marathon, yeah.
What?
I don't know. Like those African dudes who run real
far. Oh, from Kenya who always show up and like, yeah.
Tutti Consomme.
Tutti Consomme.
Won it in 2006 and 2007.
God, that feels so good on my lips.
Oh, can we cut that part out and just loop forever?
This feels so good on my lips. Lips, 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 lips.
Feels so famous. So good.
Famous.
Famous.
It just segues into his like backwards thing. Like, me saying it feels good on my lips.
Somehow Phaedrus once said backwards.
Let's just release this.
This is good.
Let's just release what we got.
This is what the people want.
Fucking in the can.
See you guys.